Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been blogging about the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and waiting for them to win the World Series for my whole life. Thanks for listening today. Let's talk some Orioles. It is now September the 22nd, 2023. The Orioles are 95-58 after losing a 5-2 games to the Cleveland Guardians on Thursday night, coupled with the Los Angeles Angels blowing a ninth-inning lead against the Tampa Bay Rays to lose in a walk-off at the Trop. The Orioles' lead in the AL East is back down to just 1.5 games. There are 9 Orioles games remaining to play and 8 Rays games left to play. The magic number for the Orioles to clinch, that is Orioles wins plus Rays losses, is 7. One tough aspect of Thursday's game for me was the repeated inability of starting pitcher Grayson Rodriguez to make Guardians batters miss when they swung their bats. Now, this is a characteristic of the Guardians team. They have the fewest strikeouts of any American League team this year so far. Entering Thursday's game, they had been striking out 18.7% of the time. So about 1 in every 6 plate appearances is a strikeout for the Guardians. That was only 1,079 strikeouts as a team going into Thursday. Now, the Orioles, by comparison, are actually not too bad relative to their peers, as they have the 4th fewest strikeouts by their batters in the AL. But that is an additional fully nearly 200 strikeouts, as the Orioles have struck out 1,278 times, again heading into Thursday. And that's a strikeout rate of 22.2%, so a bit more frequent than 1 in 5 plate appearances. And I mean, that's a huge difference, although it doesn't seem like a lot. And we saw that in action, unfortunately, for Rodriguez on Thursday, as he was only able to get through 5 innings, largely due to an elevated pitch count from Guardians batters just continuing to put foul balls all over the place and keep Rodriguez from putting them away. And ultimately, you know, it was an okay-ish outing for Rodriguez, especially if you just looked at the earned run column, 2 earned runs over 5 innings pitched. Now, 5 hits and 3 walks in 8 innings is a bit high of a whip. 7 strikeouts. He did manage to strike out some guys. It just took him a lot of pitches to get there in most of the innings. And, you know, this outing would have felt better if Rodriguez had been able to go 6 innings. It was enough to shave a little bit off of his season ERA. It's now down to 4.49. But the 5-inning start made it another big ask for a bullpen that's already been working a lot lately, and the Orioles right now are nearing the end of a 17 consecutive days with games played. So there's just been no rest for the weary in the bullpen. And we saw the chain reaction of weary bullpen, you know, forcing the Orioles to do some things they might not want to do on Thursday night, as the Orioles called upon Cionel Pérez in the bottom of the 8th inning to try to protect a 2-2 tie that the Orioles offense had just rallied for in the top of the inning, because Pérez, who had just pitched all of Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, that made it 4 games in 5 days for him. And he looked like it. The first batter he faced, he hit. He walked the second batter, gave up a single. Those were his 3 guys, the minimum. He got yanked without recording an out. Brought in Jacob Webb, who, although he hasn't pitched 4 games in 5 days, has also been used pretty heavily since joining the Orioles as a waiver claim. He promptly walked in a run. Then he got a fly ball down the right field line. This one honestly should have been an out. I don't really know why Aaron Hicks, the right fielder, was nowhere near the play at all. Adam Frazier made a heroic sprint from second base to try to make a basket catch, and he really got in the neighborhood but just couldn't make the catch. So the ball fell in. That made it 4-2. And again, an inability to get a strikeout hurt, because Webb then allowed an RBI ground out, plating the 5th Cleveland run. And after that, just for good measure, he issued another walk, which forced Hyde to change pitchers again. Mike Bauman finally ended that 8th inning, but the damage was well done. Now, even after all of that, of course, the Orioles in the 9th inning ended up bringing the tying run to the plate with no one out, with Austin Hayes getting a walk and Aaron Hicks getting a Baltimore chop single. But Adam Frazier was not able to deliver some of the heroics that he has done. He's now gone nearly two full months without homering. Frazier struck out Ramon Urias, who entered the game as a pinch runner slash defensive replacement, struck out as well against Cleveland All-Star closer Emmanuel Clase. And Gunnar Henderson, well, he couldn't put another exclamation on his Rookie of the Year case as he flew out to left to end the game. So, you know, there's no easy games for the Orioles themselves to play. And when the Orioles lose, it's not an easy game for their opponent either. But, I mean, we're at the point where there's not really any consolation prize losses, especially on a day where the Rays also win. You know, as I wrote on Camden Chat just this week, like, there's no bad day where the magic number goes down. But something's got to happen for the magic number to go down. And on Thursday, it didn't. And as for that weary bullpen, I mean, there's not really much that can be done except hope that Dean Kramer can go at least six innings against the same Guardians lineup here today on Friday. There may be a roster move if the team wants to grab someone to provide emergency length, but it's probably not going to be anyone whose arrival in the bullpen excites you based on their minor league performance. And many of the team's choices who are on the 40-man roster can't be recalled right now due to not having been in the minors for the 15-day minimum stay, which is there to keep teams from constantly optioning relievers, as the Orioles have been doing in September. The one loophole to that rule is if someone goes on the injured list, a pitcher goes on the injured list. So by my estimation, if there's not an injured list move, the only 40-man roster choices who could be recalled are Bruce Zimmerman and Tyler Wells. And whatever ends up happening, what we really have to hope is that the Orioles can find a way to squeak through to their last remaining off day without any more signs of tiring. Because honestly, the offense probably also needs a day off. Going back to last Sunday, there have been some pretty bad games, and the Orioles here are on consecutive bad days by the offense. Really not a good showing on Wednesday as they failed to get the sweep against the Astros in a game started by Christian Javier with a 4.74 ERA. And the Thursday emergency starter for Cleveland, Hunter Gaddis, who had been called up from the minors just for that game. Again, I mean, that was a contact pitcher the Orioles probably should have destroyed, and they didn't. And there you go. They probably need a rest. And it's just one more reminder of how crucial winning the division title is going to be, because obviously it's better to get a bye through the best of three wild card if you can, just to avoid that coin flip to advance in the postseason. But it also means more days off. The American League East winner is not going to play from October 2nd through October the 6th before it hosts Game 1 of the American League Division Series on October the 7th. The team that settles for Wild Card 1, be it, whether that be the Orioles or Rays, it's guaranteed to be one of those two teams, they get one day off, October the 2nd, before having to gear up to win two of three games in a Wild Card Series. And the winner of that series will maybe get 2 days, maybe one, before the ALDS begins. They won't be able to line up their starting pitchers as efficiently as if they didn't get to, if they got the bye. And really, I mean, you know, position players who've got dings could use a few days off. Relievers certainly could use a few days off. And that's what matters. The Orioles got to find a way to win the American League East to maximize their chances of advancing farther in the postseason this year. So, okay, let's look at the math after Thursday's results. Again, the magic number for the Orioles remains at 7. Thursday was not a good day. The Rays won and the Orioles lost, so the magic number stayed the same. If the Orioles go 7-2 or better in their last 9 games, the Rays cannot catch them due to the head-to-head tiebreaker that the Orioles hold. And the Rays play 8 remaining games. They have to win 2 games more than the Orioles do over their final 9 games. And of the Rays' 8 games, 6 of those come against the Toronto Blue Jays, who are in the Wild Card 2 spot, but are also only 1 game away from not making the playoffs entirely. So it would be nice if the desperate Jays can win 3 or maybe 4 of those 6 games against the Rays. That would be huge for the Orioles winning the division, but just like the Orioles could not count on the Angels doing much to help them, and they ended up being lucky that the Angels did win 1 game against the Rays, the Orioles really cannot count on the Jays. They just need to find some way to find some last bit of gas in the tank to get through these final 10 games of the season. If the Orioles go 5-4 over their remaining 9 games, the Rays would have to go 7-1 or 8-0 to make it become the American League East champions. So that's really, I think, my goal for the Orioles. Find a way to do that 5-4, hit the century mark. You know, the first time that's happened for a non-Earl Weaver managed team would be the best regular season Camden Yards has ever seen, etc. I am a little worried. The bullpen, it's really ragged, and it seems like the offense has had some running on fumes moments too. So I don't know. I mean, it's crazy. Fans certainly seem to be confident in the clincher. The Orioles announced, as I'm recording this late on Thursday night, the Saturday game, the penultimate game of the regular season, already a sellout. So I think there's a lot of people hoping that's going to be a meaningful game for winning the division. And, you know, I hope the Orioles win before the Saturday game. But if they get a clincher in front of a sold-out crowd on Saturday of the last Saturday of the regular season, that would be okay, too. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor. If you have a question or topic for a future episode of the show, you can write into the mailbag at CamdenCastPod@gmail.com. Nothing new in the mailbag today, but thank you to everyone who has written in a message so far. Before I wrap up this episode, let's talk about luck. If you are a very online Orioles fan like me, you may already be aware of some of the discourse that has made its way through Orioles online circles this week, largely courtesy of articles written at the website FanGraphs, although there was also one recently at The Athletic. But on Monday, FanGraphs published its weekly power rankings in which they assess which teams rank 1 to 30, and the Orioles, who, mind you, still have the second-best record in all of Major League Baseball, ranked 8th in these power rankings, not only behind the Braves, Dodgers, and Rays, all of whom I think are teams you can make a case to say, okay, well, they're better than the Orioles. The Braves obviously still have a better record, but even though the Dodgers and Rays have worse records, I think you can make the case. I think totally justifiable, but also having the Orioles behind the Rangers, Jays, Mariners, and Astros, that, I think, is a tougher sell. And I mean, that's been a regular pattern for this feature at this website through the season, so much so that if you've been regularly following, I think you can be forgiven for somehow thinking that's some kind of intentional troll job. Now, FanGraphs, I guess, felt enough heat or felt there would be enough traffic to write an article trying to justify some of their stance. So there was another article written by a different author. Ultimately, it boiled down to explaining why the Orioles are lucky rather than why the Orioles deserve to be counted among the great teams in the league this year. And I tell you, I am sympathetic to the perspective that it is annoying to have a website so weirdly underrate what is obviously a pretty darn good Orioles team. I found a lot of the negative response to that article in kind of the Orioles Twitter, on my website, CamdenChat.com, in the comments. It really relied on a lot of kind of unsatisfying ephemeral explanations, you know, like the stuff like, oh, they've got grit, they've got heart, they've got superior mental preparation and clubhouse chemistry and all the usual like intangible stuff, right? And honestly, I doubt even the front office that has assembled this team would believe a lot of that really counts among their strengths relative to other teams that are good major league teams this year. Although I do think the front office probably is pretty happy with the clubhouse chemistry. How much they think that accounts for added wins to the Orioles this year, I don't really know. As you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, I don't think the Orioles have assembled a roster that has a talent level where you should expect 101 wins, which is the pace they're on right now, a pace they've been near or even above for a whole lot of this season. I think no one from Mike Elias on out into any fan should look at the roster and just think, yes, this is a perfect 101-plus win roster. No notes. Now, that said, I do also find statistics-based arguments for quote-unquote luck that start with, like, Pythagorean wins and losses really through to whatever an individual writer likes to use to try and make these cases. That stuff is unsatisfying, too. I think the Orioles have enjoyed good fortune to get where they are this year, but they've also played so well to make the most of some of that good fortune. And I'm just going to rattle through some of what I think has been fortunate about the 2023 Orioles. And I mean, you can start with stuff like that Anthony Santander have both and Austin Hayes have both played solid to good seasons without making any prolonged injured list stints. Not something guaranteed for either of those guys based on their careers to date. You can be very thankful, I think, that the only starts that were missed by opening day rotation members by the Orioles due to someone being injured were the starts that Kyle Bradish missed after taking a line drive off the leg in his first start. So you've had Kyle Gibson make 31 starts, Dean Kramer make 30. Bradish has made 28, even with that injury. Wells pitched 21 games, 20 starts, effectively 21 starts since he went long in relief of Bradish when Bradish got hurt. That was before Wells got demoted. He made 21 games, of course. And Rodriguez, Grayson Rodriguez, has made every second half start since being recalled. So, like, we never had to find out who started out the season as the number seven starting pitching option in the rotation. And I think that's good because it was probably either Bruce Zimmerman, whose major league career ERA is 5.56, or Drew Rahm, who, after shutting the O's down when the Cardinals were in Baltimore, he got shelled in his most recent start after that, and he's got a 6.92 ERA through six career games. So, I mean, you know, one way you'd have a worse version of the 2023 Orioles is just things playing out in April or May or June even, such that one of those guys needed to make a lot of starts. And I think also the Orioles were really fortunate in some roster additions they were able to make at low to no cost, even after they were 83-79 last year and they didn't have the same claim anybody you like on waivers priority. They did still manage to get a couple of players either over the offseason or in spring training for just cash considerations. One of these was Ryan O'Hearn, acquired from the Royals in the offseason for cash, because from Kansas City's perspective, O'Hearn was a 29-year-old first baseman who had never hit in several major league seasons. And O'Hearn, he came here, he has become one of the most crucial hitters on the team. As we discussed in the last episode, he is the most overall clutch Orioles hitter by the wins probability added stat. And he added to that on Thursday when he hit what was a game briefly tying hit that ended up tying the game at 2-2. In the bullpen, the Orioles added Danny Colom. He was acquired from the Twins for cash at the end of spring training because the veteran reliever the Orioles had signed, Michael Givens, was hurt and was not going to be able to fill that role. So Colom came in. He was ended up being the bullpen lefty, and he's been pretty darn good this year. And they had some very good fortune in their in-season acquisitions as well, because Aaron Hicks ended up being let go by the Yankees because he looked like he was toast, and that was right before Cedric Mullins got injured, and the Orioles, although I was not very positive about the Hicks addition at the time, brought him in, and Hicks really has managed to stabilize the outfield situation. I haven't been very excited by Hicks's fielding lately, but his 838 OPS with the Orioles going into Thursday's game, in which he got two hits in four at-bats, really speaks for itself. And I think also the Orioles are fortunate that they've been able to have a bullpen that up until Felix Bautista's injury was pretty stable, at least as far as injuries are concerned. The only reason there aren't six Orioles relievers with 60 plus games pitched is that Brian Baker got himself demoted for a while. And, you know, I mean, there's luck involved, I think, in Tyler Wells being as good as he was for only 3 months, even though that immediately evaporated, and the Orioles, to their credit, recognized this and demoted him. There was luck, I think, in Yennier Cano's season being as good as it was, and in the Orioles having acquired Yennier Cano, I still believe he was just a throw-in to make the 40-man roster math even when the Orioles got him in the Jorge Lopez trade last year. I'm sure neither, you know, Mike Elias nor the Twins ever imagined anything like that was possible. I think there was some luck in Kyle Bradish developing into the pitcher who deserves some down-ballot Cy Young consideration this year. And I mean, the Orioles, they've benefited from having these players and putting these players in positions to succeed and then seeing what happens. And for a lot of these things, it's been pretty well overall. But let's not kid ourselves. None of the good things that have happened to the 2023 Orioles were 100% inevitable outcomes, right? And, you know, that's true for any baseball team that succeeds. Everything that happens, none of it was guaranteed. And, you know, that's why you want to treasure everything that does happen, because none of it was guaranteed. Like, run the season back again for the Orioles, and it's going to look different. It could be all kinds of stuff could happen. You know, you could have Gunnar Henderson fit in the good but not elite bucket, like maybe Adley Rutschman is in, as he's not hitting for overwhelming elite hitting, and his defense, at least according to metrics, has tailed off a bit. You know, maybe Hayes or Santander get hurt early on, and then Kyle Stowers gets the playing time early on. It, you know, there's infinite permutations of things that could have happened. And we are living in the version of the 2023 season where the Orioles have won 95 games through 153 games. So I think that they are fortunate to have done that. Although I don't, you know, I put it all together and you have a team. They've won 95 games. At worst, they will be the wild card one. I don't think any team out there is going to want to face the Orioles in the playoffs. You know, they've been playing close, meaningful games all year. And despite most of the roster not having playoff experience, I think they've been getting tested in games they need to win all year to catch the Rays, who started off the season, remember, 13-0, and then to stay ahead of the Rays, as the Orioles have done. They've been uninterrupted leading in the American League East since July 22nd. I'm sorry, there was the one day they were tied. They've been at least tied every day since July the 19th, which, I mean, it's been a great 2 months and 2 days of baseball from the Orioles to be able to do that. And again, being a team that so many of these publications are incurious enough as to attribute to luck that the Orioles have exceeded their expectations, I really feel like ultimately that kind of thing does a disservice to the audience without really probing and trying to figure out why these things have happened. And, you know, I hope the Orioles can play their way to a World Series and really leave these people scratching their heads. But it's going to come down to how they play over the final 9 games to see whether they can win the AL East and really set themselves up for having their best chance to make a deep postseason run, I think. That's all that I've got for today. If you enjoy this show, please do subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave a rating or a review, and tell an Orioles fan you know about the show. New episodes will be out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, so I will be back with you on Monday morning, hopefully with some better Orioles games against the Guardians to talk about than the one we talked about here today. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. Until next time, go O's!